The Homeless Podcast deals with topics of a sensitive nature and is not intended for all audiences. At times, this podcast may include explicit language or adult themes. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the Homeless Podcast, Season 1, Episode 13, a podcast that tells the stories of those that live on the fringe of society and those that seek to help. As you listen to this episode, please note that the opinions stated on the podcast by guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the Homeless Podcast itself. Someone I have come to know over the years is Azam Ali. Through various twists and turns, we have found ourselves sharing a voice for the subjugated and a passion to reach out and understand others from all walks of life. Azam is a performer, poet, and a humanitarian, and you are listening to her right now. This is her song called Tenderness from her album From Night to the Edge of the Day. And why am I playing this beautiful Arabic lullaby? Well, this episode focuses on a group of individuals that, quite frankly, when thought of as homeless, absolutely break my heart. Don't get me wrong, every life that faces homelessness is just as important as the next, but the idea of children, of infants, living without shelter, well, that's almost too much for me to handle. A lullaby is not only fitting for this episode, but it's haunting. You can hear more from Azam Ali by searching her on Spotify, iTunes, and on YouTube. And links to her music can be found in this episode's notes. Azam, you are a shining star in a dark sky, and I couldn't be more honored to call you a friend. Thank you for all you do. The story I'm about to read is taken from a true online account of a homeless family. While you're listening, think about your own family, your own livelihood, and those around you that might be facing similar situations.
Thank you.
On a warm September afternoon, Destiny Scales was sorting everything her family owned into two piles, essentials and things that would go into storage. Into one bin went pajamas, underwear, and socks for her girls, Priscilla, age 4, and Story, age 3. Their dollhouse and play kitchen went by the front door for the storage unit, as did family photos, bedroom sets, and Destiny's wedding dress. Her son, Trinell, age 11, looked up from his video game.
"Mom, where are we going?"
he asked. Destiny, age 30, was dizzy. How could she explain to her children that they'd been evicted from their home in Fairfax County, Virginia, one of the 10 richest counties in the nation, according to Forbes? With just $2,000 in the bank, she and her husband, Darwin, age 32, had booked an $86 room at a Quality Inn down the road.
"We can't live here anymore,"
she told her son.
"We don't have the money, so we're going to a motel until we figure out where to go next."
She hugged him.
"It's going to be okay,"
she said, trying to reassure him. That night, at the motel, the girls wrapped themselves in their pink fleece Cinderella blankets and watched TV. Trinell tickled Baby, as he calls Story, and wrestled with Priscilla to distract them from feeling sad and worried. The next morning, Trinell walked to a shopping center to catch the school bus.
"I didn't tell my friends. They might make fun of me,"
he recalls.
"If they found out, I'd say we were taking a family vacation."
When you swipe through the photos on Destiny's phone, you see her kids at a pizza place, Priscilla beaming in a new dress, a Christmas tree with a mountain of gifts. Yet those are scenes from their old life, when Destiny ran a home-based childcare business and when Darwin worked a regular schedule at the Home Depot. You see, for Destiny and Darwin, the final blow was when their landlord raised the rent by $685 per month. None of their relatives had room for them to stay, even just for a little while. With all the upheaval, Destiny wants stability for her kids. She never considers moving to a less costly town.
"Keeping them in their schools is one thing I can do,"
she says. As the Scales motel stay stretched on, and their savings slowly disappeared, a counselor at the girls' Head Start preschool program started calling social services groups on their behalf. Despite receiving this help, there were still challenges.
"I started to feel nervous at school,"
Trinell recalls. He had trouble focusing, his mind would wander.
"How long will we be in this place? Where will we go next?"
Trinell would be doing a math lesson and feel tears rolling down his cheek. He'd excuse himself to go to the guidance counselor's office. One day, after school, Trinell came home crying and upset. He wailed to Destiny that he was so sorry that he'd made them homeless, that he'd eaten so much, that he'd asked for so many video games.
"I'm so sorry, Mom. I won't ask you for anything ever again."
Destiny erupted in tears along with him, trying to find a way to reassure him.
"My poor baby, Trinell, none of this has anything to do with you. What's most frustrating to me is that I'm a motivated person. I want to work,"
Darwin says.
"If I could just get a second job."
In the meantime, the Scales are trying to make do with what they have. At the beginning of every month, the family gets $548 in food stamps. Destiny has become creative at making it last, although it never really does. Every week, she buys a big pack of ground turkey, using half to make tacos and the other half for meat sauce or burgers. When Trinell cries that he wants 4 tacos, Destiny must explain that
the meat has got to be enough for everyone, so you can only have 2.
The Scales used to host big dinners, inviting their families over on Sundays. Now that fun routine is on hold indefinitely. Nobody is much in the mood to laugh. And although her relatives would probably be happy to make it a potluck, Destiny hates to ask them to. Recently, the Scales suffered another loss. Because Destiny and Darwin couldn't make the payments on the storage unit, their belongings were auctioned off as a lot, including their irreplaceable baby albums. On most days, as soon as the kids are off to school, Destiny and Darwin walk to the employment office at the South County building.
"I'm doing everything in my power to remove my kids from this situation,"
says Destiny.
"I just keep telling myself it can't rain forever."
Destiny, who sometimes gets temp work, says she's applied for countless positions, but has been called for just one interview. A local nonprofit took her shopping for a cardigan and flats with polka dots for the occasion, but she never heard back. Even after a blow like that, the family's determined to stay positive.
No matter what went on during the day, I always tell Destiny that I love her before I go to sleep, says Darwin. I want her to know that I have her back. We'll always have each other.
Meanwhile, in the bedroom, Trinell shares with his sisters. He keeps a Pringles can on the top shelf of his closet, next to his books.
I decided I needed to be brave, not to worry so much, he says.
So, he started a collection to help his family get a new house. Whenever he sees a penny, he'll pop it in. So far, he has 51 cents. It's not much, he admits, but he's going to fill it up.
Come on, let's go for a walk,
Destiny calls on a frigid January afternoon. It's a ritual the family enjoys most days.
We went out for walks before, and we go out now, she says. I try to do as much as I can to keep things normal. It makes us all feel better.
Strolling through the neighborhood, they seem like any other family. Nobody knows that they're homeless. Today, you will meet Britton. She is the executive director of Babies of Homelessness, based in Seattle. She has sobering facts, statistics that will make your skin crawl, and yet, she has a positive outlook into what can be done for these families. She is a veteran and an uplifting spirit. She is determined to make sure babies, infants, and toddlers do not go without essentials. On the Babies of Homelessness website, you can read more about their mission, their outreach, and what you can do to help the most vulnerable of the homeless community. When you scroll through their site, you can see just how much this mission to help means to them. Quote, for families with children experiencing homelessness, having the basics can change everything. Seattle and King County has the third largest homeless population in the United States after New York and Los Angeles. As of 2018, the count of families with children experiencing homelessness is one of the fastest growing and least visible segments in our country. An estimated 1 in 3 families is struggling to provide enough diapers to keep a baby or toddler clean, dry, and healthy. Since many families work, they must decide between the cost of getting to work or a month's supply of diapers, which is between $80 and $100 per month. Government assistance programs do not pay for their diapers. The cost can increase because families may lack the opportunity to purchase or even store diapers in bulk. This means parents improvise to make diapers stretch further, changing diapers less often, or attempting to clean and reuse disposable diapers, which are health and safety hazards. End quote. This is Britton. Well, Britton, let's start talking about your organization here. First of all, thanks for agreeing to do this. You know, I think one of the most important things is that we just get messages out and let people know how they can contribute. And that there's so many different ways, and that's really what this podcast does. But you're the executive director of Homelessness for Babies in Seattle. Tell me about that organization.
Yeah, you know, this actually started off as this volunteer-run movement. None of us, I'll be clear up front, none of us are trained experts in nonprofit or social workers. This all started by Star, who is the founder, and she's still very active on our team. She heard a story on the Ron and Don show of a two-year-old sitting in like a soiled diaper at one of the major encampments. And she honestly was angry. You know, she was like, how the hell can a baby defend itself and walk out of such an environment? And whether that anger was misplaced or not, it compelled her to do something. And so you know, she took ownership. She rallied a couple of her friends, and right out of her living room, she put together care packages. And basically, you know, word got around in the community of this woman, you know, going to Othello Village or South Center or under the I-5 bridge. And she was just delivering these care packages of diapers, just baby basics, faster than any type of well-funded nonprofit could. And just within the first year, you know, the demand of families, like, for whatever reason, calling her, texting her, it became huge. And so, you know, she quickly formed a board. And here we are today. You know, we're more than 4 years old. I'm the only paid staff, and we're up to 60 volunteers. And basically, Russell, I'm not sure if you have any families that are listening, but if you're a family out there and you are living in your car, you might be doubled up at your friend's house, you're living in an encampment or at a shelter, we have a crisis line that you can call. You can place an order of things such as diapers, pull-ups, wipes, formula, and food. And we will send a volunteer wherever you're at, and we'll deliver those items within 72 hours. And so why this all even matters, and I won't go into the whole extent of it. You know, here in Seattle, we have amazing nonprofits. They're using these really complex system-based approaches to tackling homelessness. But honestly, what often gets ignored is that families can't even move beyond their immediate needs or get out of that paralysis of living in a traumatic environment unless they have their basic needs met and unless they can provide the basic needs for their kids. Mm. And, you know, we do have here in Washington, we have 8 diaper banks that exist. 2 of those are right here in King County. They're doing hard and impactful work. But what we're hearing from the families that we're serving is that these diaper banks, the way that they're set up, it's really fit to serve families that are in low-income communities. You know, you're placed on a wait list of 2 to 3 weeks. You have to go through a referral process, and then you have to figure out a way to get to a diaper bank partner to maybe get 2 weeks worth of diapers. And so kind of our motto is, you know, let's cut through all of that bullshit. You know,
mm-hmm. I love it.
We're not going to put our families on a wait list. We're not going to make them navigate a maze of bureaucratic agencies. If a mother needs diapers, we have a whole team of volunteers. We'll meet her wherever she's at and deliver immediately.
That's fantastic. You know, you bring something up that honestly just, I never really think about, I never consider, and that is diaper needs for babies. For families that can't afford basic diapers. So basically, people can drop off diapers, and you say there's a waiting list to get in to pick some up?
The diaper banks that do exist in King County, they're not necessarily tapping into this invisible, hardest to reach families. These are families that are outside of the case management system. They may not have the support such as transportation or even cell phone service or even time to figure out a way to get to a diaper bank partner, and then maybe they might get 2 weeks worth of diapers. And so That's kind of, we're working in tandem with these diaper banks. You know, we're cutting through those accessibility barriers. Also, we know in places like Snohomish and Pierce counties, where there are communities of color, just communities that are disproportionately affected, there aren't any diaper banks. I'm not sure why. And so we've really been filling the gap in those areas. Russell, just to step back a little bit.
Sure.
Why are we even focused on diapers? You know, if you ask a social worker at any organization, like, what they need, they all have a similar problem. And it's basically they don't have enough diapers. It's honestly one of the most requested need items out there. Diapers are incredibly expensive, like you just said. They're about $100 a month. And 2 of the largest federal agencies, WIC and SNAP, do not provide any type of vouchers to purchase diapers. You know, we get asked a lot, why aren't you guys promoting cloth diapering? Well, you know, if you are a homeless family, there might be lack of access to water, you're without a washer. And come on, you know, when you're living at, an emergency shelter or even transitional housing, they're not going to allow you to wash your soiled diapers in shared machines. So it's a huge problem out there right now. Our philosophy is, you know, if we can provide a month's worth of diapers at a time to a mom, she feels a sense of empowerment, she feels confidence, and she can solely focus on bonding with her baby. But honestly, we believe like if we can at least meet those basic needs of the family, the parents can focus on, you know, navigating housing, you know, seeking out education, all of these other higher order needs that they have.
You hit on something that I think is really interesting, and it's come up in every time I talk with either somebody who's an advocate for the homeless, or they work for an organization, or they're homeless themselves, and that is the feeling of empowerment / ownership, you know, something they can be proud of. And you know, I think that's really key, Britton. And I think a lot of people don't think about that, that sometimes it just takes a smile or a hello or something to make them feel better about themselves. And that puts them on a road to recovery. Has that been your experience at all?
Yeah. You know, I think this whole notion that bettering our communities should be left to only the experts with like perfect solutions, I think that's hogwash. None of us live in silos. We are all interconnected, whether we're housed or not. The fact that we're human and we, as we know right now, we're facing hardships, pain, suffering, that, you know, that should connect us all rather than divide us. And so kind of our motto is, look, you know, you might, as some sort of stranger out there, you might feel overwhelmed with everything that's going on right now. And because of that, sometimes when you do witness suffering of like a family out in the streets, it might seem overwhelming. And because of that, you know, you turn inward and you focus on things that you can change. But if you have anything, any little thing that you can do bit by bit is impactful. So whether it be passing out one of our business cards with our crisis line, or even if you even have 15 minutes a month, you know, everyone has a part to play. And like you said, and I've heard this on some of your previous episodes, it all boils down to compassion. I don't know, for whatever reason here in Seattle, I'm amazed. You know, we live in one of the most progressive places, but I witnessed so much, is it called compassion fatigue? So much backlash. And I don't know if it's because people feel that money is poured into Seattle and they don't see that the problem of homelessness is going away, so they become just jaded. I'm not sure. But I do feel that missing piece is compassion. And maybe one solution is, you know, we need maybe more nonprofits that are running these anti-stigma campaigns of like, what happens when a community does give back unconditional love and makes people in the thick of it feel worthy? Like, what does happen? And I know there are organizations out there like Facing Homelessness and Resolution and Homelessness doing that, but maybe they need more of our support because like you said, in order to get people to act, they need to feel something, right? They need to feel either anger or empathy. And from learning from our volunteers, it doesn't matter, honestly. As long as they can first feel, then we can move them toward a point of compassion and even just them to act, whether it's 15 minutes or even more.
How would somebody volunteer 15 minutes a week? What would that look like for somebody? An example.
So speaking specifically to our organization's needs, we need help identifying families out there. Like I said, family homelessness, it's one of the most invisible and hardest to reach and also fastest growing segments out there. And many of these families are not yet connected to the case management system. You know, they're, like I said, they're doubled up, they're couch surfing, they're living in their cars. You wouldn't even know it. And I think one impactful thing that community members can do is if you see a family out there in the corner of a Safeway parking lot, you know, we have a crisis line. If you can memorize it, that is impactful. That takes less than 5 minutes to basically share our number with that family so that they can become connected and you know, even though we focus on something as specific as basic needs, once families are connected with us and they're starting to receive diapers for their kids and formula and things like that, like I said, that's just the beginning of a journey forward to other things.
Does your organization partner or refer to other services as well, like behavioral health services, other family services that might be needed as well, if homelessness for babies can't meet those needs?
Definitely. Well, the irony in this is right now with COVID, we are having, you know, well-established, well-funded, large nonprofits, federal agencies reaching out to us every day. You know, just the other day, I got a call from Washington State Department of VA. They're begging for our help with diapers. Yeah. I don't know if they're aware that we are volunteer run. We're still very much a young organization. You know, we're struggling. We're struggling with funding and staffing and all that. But it is a two-way street. You know, the way we distribute diapers, it's twofold. So on a weekly basis, you know, we have volunteers that are using their own vehicles, and they're driving throughout two counties to directly deliver to families. But then we also rely on a partner network. You know, twice a month, we take out our van and we deliver to Sacred Heart Shelter, to Interfaith up in Everett, to Homeward House, to a safe park out here in Kirkland. We have so many partners focused on different things because, like I said, that shared need, it's always diapers. Organizations always seem to run out of diapers. And so,
you know, you see all these different organizations that seem to have a certain focus, but then I feel like what I've realized is when people come to an organization for help, that a whole load of different needs kind of comes to the surface. And so, it, like you said earlier, for me, it would be great to see more organizations kind of working together. And I think, like you said, many are. But to see this kind of this growth of either compassion or empathy needs to be more of a theme running through. And you're right. There is so much, I guess the word is animosity that I see out there right now. And why are people upset at homelessness and angered? And I see so many horrible comments online, you know, and I've received some myself just because, you know, I'm trying to show up, you know, what we can do to help. And some of the comments I get are, well, tell them just to stop drinking and go get a job. There's a lot more to it, isn't there, you know? And how do we reach out?
Russell, I think what you're doing, though, I think you are in many ways running this, breaking those stereotypes and stigmas by just sharing those firsthand stories of people in it. These are stories that aren't just about substance abuse or mental health. You know, I will tell you, 3 years of doing outreach work, collecting qualitative and quantitative data, a majority of our families are working. You know, they are working. I guess you could call it they're on the straight and narrow path or whatever, but And of course, there are a variety of issues that led them to experience homelessness. But the one thing, it is always a housing issue and a lack of support. You know, they may not have family or friends. And so I just challenge more people. If you are angry, come out with us. Hopefully after when COVID resolves, but come out with us, do a ride along and get to know and meet some of these families.
We'll be right back. Imagine looking up at the trees, looking down at the dirt under your shoes, hearing the sound of wind and smelling the outdoors. We all could use a little bit of outdoor therapy. Now, imagine yourself looking at the same things around you and seeing them as your roof, as your walls, your shelter. Imagine not being able to appreciate the outdoors as you travel back to the safety of your home. Imagine that the trees you see nearby, or the alleyway you find yourself walking down, will be your shelter for the night. Imagine that you have a child with you, a toddler, an infant. How will you protect them? How will you meet their immediate needs? You can't even afford the simple things, like diapers and bathing supplies. That is where Babies of Homelessness comes in. You as a listener can help meet these needs by partnering and volunteering with this amazing organization in so many ways. Delivering diapers, taking phone calls, and even prepping the occasional meal. Babies of Homelessness is an organization that not only depends on the kindness of your heart, but the time in your pocket. And if you aren't able to volunteer, consider making a donation. With a powerful mission to help those most vulnerable, Babies of Homelessness is intent on helping every child and every family that they can. You can learn more about Babies of Homelessness at babiesofhomelessness.org. If you know a family that is in need, give them their direct line and Britton or someone from the organization will guide you in the right direction. You can reach Babies of Homelessness at 866-442-6443. Again, that number is 866-442-6443. You can learn more in the episode notes and find links to information on supporting those that so desperately need it. Babies of Homelessness, delivering hope. You bring up the idea of stories. You know, there are so many different stories out there. Is there a story of a family that pops to your mind, obviously without giving personal details, but maybe a family you worked with at one point that kind of pops in your head?
Yeah, we're actually friends today. Just a young mom, actually came from a low middle class socioeconomic class, but young mom had a baby, just disconnected from her family. And one very hot summer out here in Kirkland, she had just given birth to a little baby girl. The hospital basically sent her along her way without a car seat or anything. You know, she didn't have diapers, clothing, nothing, no car seat for her baby. I have no idea. I can't remember how. Oh, I think the New Bethlehem Day Center told her about us. She called us, and at that time, I had been volunteering as an outreach driver. I had met her. Her and her husband had been parked off of a side street right in downtown Kirkland. Which is an irony, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So much wealth. You wouldn't even know she's there. She and her husband are parked in a van off of a side street. Her husband works during the day, would commute down to Renton. And she was just with this newborn during the extremely hot summer. And so, you know, during that whole entire summer, we were out there delivering diapers, even like a little fan and water bottles. And desperately also working with a case manager at New Bethlehem Center to get her into housing. And I remember shortly after she had her baby, she was so scared that her newborn had a heat stroke. And so she took her baby to the hospital, and guess what they did? They threatened CPS on her for being negligent, simply by virtue of being homeless.
Yeah.
And anyway, this is 3 years later. Throughout the whole journey, she's living in housing in Bellevue. She's a full-time stay-at-home mom. She does have hopes and dreams to become a dental hygienist, but you know, they're doing amazing. They have housing now.
That's great.
And it's just indicative of how disconnected the system is. You would think that the hospital that she gave birth in would have some sort of short intake process to just gauge, like, hey, do you have any housing needs? Where are you going after this? Like, to just kind of let her be, and without a car seat or any of that. And it's just representative of how disconnected all of these entities in our communities are. Like, there just needs to be more connection, because some organization could have reached out much earlier.
That's heartbreaking. I don't think about that either. And when somebody does give birth and all of a sudden they're in a hospital and it's okay, your day is up, or however long, or if you have a cesarean, okay, your 48 hours are up and off you go, you know,
right.
Who's following up on that? And boy, what an interesting concept. Have you heard of any organizations, or is this something that Babies of Homelessness does, where they kind of keep tabs on that type of thing? Is there a way to do that?
Well, you know, it should be part of our responsibility. We're starting to focus on doing this more, but we partner with first responders, you know, police, firefighters that are out there, social workers, CPS, people that are out there and we do share our crisis line. Mm-hmm. We haven't yet done that with any organizations in the healthcare system. And I think that might be one way to get them involved. I mean, all they need to do as a nurse, you know, nurses are tapped out and working their butts off, but even just having our number.
Maybe in training, medical training, there needs to be that. I know they do training in social, social awareness and such, but it almost makes you wonder if maybe that became more of a significant part of the mental and emotional well-being, as well as the physical, you know, the holistic approach to medicine. It's a very interesting concept. Can you tell me a little bit, Britton, about how you got involved personally? You said you were a volunteer driver. How did that start off?
So I served just straight up. I served in the military for 8 years, and I'm a combat veteran. I was deployed twice. And
well, thank you for your service.
Well, thank you. During a second deployment, I just realized I felt like I was living out of a bubble, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to better understand the people we were fighting against. It was really political. So anyway, I left the military, totally changed my career, got into the nonprofit space. I was always helping these organizations with lack of funding, lack of resources, really get off the ground. And you know, after graduate school, I had to pay bills. I had kids, I had a mortgage. And so at the time I met Star, I was working at a tech company. I just had a baby. I just got laid off. And I saw a Facebook post by Star asking for anyone out there in the community if they had any type of experience in organizational development. And not knowing what any of that entailed, I raised my hand virtually and I was like, hey, I was really eager. There was just some sort of void in my life. You know, I just had a baby. There was probably PTSD or postpartum depression. And I'm like, hey, I'm here to help you and I'll do so for free. I'll get your organization set up as a 501c3. I'll create the bylaws. Everything I've done in the past 10 or so years, I'll pour it into your organization and help you. I wasn't yet connected with anything. I didn't know anything about the family homelessness in Seattle. Quickly, when I met her, you know, outside of my full-time job as a mom and parenting, I was taking calls from families asking for things. I was driving all the way to Federal Way, all the way up to Everett. You know, I was doing all of the back-end things, such as helping to create a website. I was a volunteer for, you know, we've been around for 4 years, for the first 3 years. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, I forget this. I grew up in a low-income working family. My dad reminds me that, you know, we had brief periods of homelessness. There was couch surfing. When we moved from Seattle down to Stockton, we had been living in a tent. It's really hard to remember because I was so young. And honestly, my parents, they didn't have the family support, but they had friends to help them. They actually broke out of poverty. And, you know, for the better part of my childhood, I had this happy, modest childhood. And I feel like I'm in a different socioeconomic class today. I've always recognized how privileged I am. I'm just really hyper-focused on it. Mm-hmm. And how that privilege affects others. And so I feel like I kind of found Babies of Homelessness by accident, and I do have the skill sets to help it grow, but it's also allowed me to kind of take ownership and give back and kind of help level out that playing field for those who aren't, you know, who don't benefit from the said same privilege.
That's an amazing story because it just shows that you've lived it, you know, and you've lived it in a different time and you've in a different memory, but you can apply this to yourself. And that, you know, I find when I talk to people and they want to give back or they want to volunteer, they want to do anything to help, that they just don't know how, because maybe they don't have any kind of understanding. They don't have an experience it themselves, or, you know, maybe they come from a more of a privileged background. And so to hear you tell that story, it is heartwarming because I believe there's hope. I truly do. You know,
well, I think Russell, like we were talking about, it's really having the courage, like I said, you know, as I repeat, the notion that only experts can contribute to improving their communities is BS. I mean, we all have a part to play. All of us at Babies of Homelessness, we've made mistakes. Like I said, we're no experts. We're transparent about it. We learn from them along the way. But at least we're doing something bit by bit. And I hope that can instill some confidence in other people out there that may not come from the nonprofit space or social work, or even they may not have ever known someone that is experiencing homelessness. I encourage you to start somewhere. Even if you may not feel comfortable making deliveries or fielding calls from families out there, you can help with back-end operations. But I just encourage people, even if it's coming from a place of anger and skepticism, to start somewhere.
What would you say to somebody who wants, you've already kind of hit on this a little bit, but somebody who is walking down the street, they see maybe a homeless family or even just a homeless individual, and they don't know what to do. What advice would you give to that person, what they can do in the moment?
So just touching on a little bit, I think it's just showing that unconditional love and encouragement simply by recognizing the person that's in the thick of it with a nod, with a smile, showing some sort of encouragement. As people, we feel like we have to solve a problem ourselves. Mm. And if it's too big, we completely turn the other way. And we only focus on things that we can control within our own families. Well, if you see a family out there, you know, even just recognizing that family with a nod, with a smile, you would be amazed at that, at how much benefit that does. That's part of showing unconditional love and encouragement. And I think that would be a good place to start.
Thank you so much. Well, hey, I just want to say thank you so much, Britton, for what you're doing for these families. And, you know, it's encouraging to me. And quite frankly, these podcasts have been great because a lot of stories have gotten out. We have listeners in Australia all the way to Ireland. I've got some listeners in France. But quite frankly, this has been really good for me because I have learned more about how I can give back. And what you've done is you've brought it home, you've kept it real, and you've kept it raw. And that to me is the most valuable thing right now, especially as we all seem to be isolating ourselves. And who knows? I mean, we know that our state's looking at opening up, but who knows when it's going to happen, honestly. And we're all just kind of in this together. So I just want to say thank you so much.
Hey, we really appreciate it.
My heart has ached for various reasons in the past, but after speaking with Britton, I was met with both an aching and a warmth at the same time. There are so many needs out there, and as we talked, it seemed that those needs are not only endless, but often aren't even accessible. How are hospitals equipped to help homeless mothers giving birth? How does a father make sure his newborn is protected from the elements? Where will that next diaper come from? Britton has made it her life mission to support those that seek refuge, that seek help. She has dedicated her outreach to making sure the immediate needs of our smallest humans are being met. Please visit babiesofhomelessness.org to volunteer or to donate today if you are able. They could use your support, and as Britton says, you don't need to be an expert in social work. Just have a heart of compassion. There is a poem by Penny Brown called Grandchild, and it captures what we should all hope for every child. See you in 2 weeks, and until then, don't look away.
A new life, a little baby, a little star. The world awaits you near and far, with guidance and loving care that will keep you safe and happy there. There's a family to meet, pets and friends to greet. A long path with us you'll share. We'll always be happy to meet you there. Life experiences will soon unfold. stories now waiting to be told, adventures, discoveries, obstacles, and dreams, all join to form your self-esteem. Of yourself, have no fears. Enjoy each day over the years. Be proud of who you are, no fuss, a unique little person loved by all of us.